Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and right now there are plant sales everywhere you look. Garden centers are overflowing with plants. And this hour, we are going to get some shopping advice so we come home with strong, healthy plants that we actually have room for. And of course, we will also answer your questions this hour. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will join us in a couple of minutes. But first, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And that last point I made, that we're going to come home with plants that we actually have room for, I think that that's an important place to start, because a lot of us go to these plant sales and we're excited and the plants are beautiful and it's easy to make some impulse purchases. So before you go, what should you do?
You know, it is very easy to do. I have, of course, never have done something
right, not
like
you.
That. But I often go out shopping with a short list of plants that I'm looking for. But also, I try to have a really good idea of the areas and the environmental conditions that I'm looking for. So what I mean by that is, you know, I want to find a plant for that wet, sunny spot that I have at the base of my downspout. And I think that's going to be a button bush. And so I'll look for that. But maybe I'll be open to some other things too. Maybe it won't be a shrub. Maybe it'll be something like Joe Pye weed or you know, something different. But I have kind of this list of places in my yard I'm looking. And I won't purchase anything unless I know I have a spot for it. It requires me to understand my yard pretty well in terms of where the sun is and what areas are wet or dry. That helps me quite a bit, actually, from buying things that I really don't have a spot for.
All right. So walk around the yard and think through what you actually need before you go to the garden center.
Yeah. And you can write it down if that helps you.
Oh,
and
I think
sometimes
that helps.
That does.
Yeah. or take a disinterested party along with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, no, you actually don't need that. So once you decide, you know, of course you're going to be open to some serendipity. You may see a plant you didn't even know about that once mm-hmm. you read that little card on it, you think that would be perfect for this spot in my yard. So I'm not trying to suck all the fun out of it. But once you decide what you're going to buy, how do you select a plant that you know is strong and going to grow well?
Well, it's important to look at the first thing I always look at when I'm especially looking at annuals, vegetables, and perennials is looking for plants that are well balanced and sized for their pot. So not something that's excessively large for the pot and not something that looks really small. If it's really small, it might have been just recently potted up into a larger size, which is something greenhouses and nurseries do all the time. They grow things out and they get bigger, and so they'll move them up to a new size. But you often don't want that plant just a few weeks after that's happened because it hasn't established well in that pot yet. And so you're really paying a little bit more for something that's still essentially the same size that it was a few weeks ago.
Just right, and you usually pay by the pot size, so that's something to look
out for.
Yeah,
the larger the container, the more expensive the plant typically is. The other thing that you'll really want to look for is plants that are kind of sturdy, robust, and compact, especially when we look at annuals and vegetables. Things that are really lanky or spindly don't transplant easily or well into the gardens. They don't grow out well. They sometimes flop over or have more trouble getting well established and then looking nice after that. So you're looking for compact, kind of sturdy plants in the containers when you're shopping.
Do you need to, I mean, of course, we're buying all kinds of different kinds of plants and structure is going to be a little bit different, but are there some basic structural things that we should look for beyond that sort of compact and healthy plant.
Yeah, this is particularly true for woody plants. Woody plants, shrubs and trees in particular, are long lived in your landscape. And so we want to make sure that we start with something really good. And when we're looking at trees and shrubs, we want to make sure that branches aren't broken or scraping. They have good kind of architecture. And so we don't have a lot of branches crossing or growing inward. On trees, the branches are well spaced and not limbed up too high. You'll often see young trees where the ends of the branches are trimmed back. This isn't necessarily a problem. A lot of trees, one of the ways the producer will get the tree to kind of promote a little bit more branching is to kind of head back those branches to promote new growth. And that can be helpful on really young trees. So when you see that, it's not because there was damage or anything like that. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Certain species really benefit from that. But you still want to make sure that you have just nice branching, good. Most trees you'll want to see one single stem with branches coming off of it, not a big V or a Y in the branches, because that V or Y long term doesn't create a very structurally sound tree. And course, this is going to be long term in your yard. You want to start with something good.
Now, we want something that looks green and lush. So mm-hmm. that makes a difference, right? I mean, when you look at the plant, you want to just get your basic impression of what the leaves look like, for example, right?
Yeah, good, healthy leaves. Occasionally, you'll find, being in a container is stressful. So you might see some light browning on the edges of leaves or things like that. And that's not always a huge red flag. But if you see an excessive amount of that, or if you see a rather thin looking plant, or if you're the other thing you want to look for when you're inspecting those leaves, if you see any indication of disease or insect damage or insects themselves, that's a real good sign. Just stay away from that plant. And in fact,
if
you see it on
spread to your other plants too, that's a little
exactly.
dangerous.
Exactly. And if you see it on more than one plant, especially more than one plant in different parts of the nursery or greenhouse, then I might think about going somewhere else to shop, because it's likely that they have a lot of those problems throughout, and you don't want to inadvertently bring some of that stuff home. This is really true for things like house plants, because once they get inside, it can be really difficult to control them. So keep that in mind as well.
All right. Well, and you talked about the root system of the plants, mm-hmm. and that's something that I can't really see when I look at a plant when I'm at the garden center. How do you know if it has a strong, healthy root system?
Well, you can absolutely slip it out of the pot. So most container-grown perennials, woody plants, annuals, all that stuff really usually pretty easily slip out of the pot. So you can grab one of the plants and then kind of gently tap the sides, loosen the pot, and then carefully lift it out and look at that root system. You should see in that root system white, plump, kind of healthy roots, not an excessive amount. So it shouldn't be solid roots around the outside of the plant. And in particular, when we're talking about woody plants, we want to make sure that we don't have a lot of roots that are running around in circles, round and round in the pot. Because what that does for trees, and it can cause a girdling root situation. So those roots will continue to circle around. And as they grow in diameter, they can essentially kind of choke off the base of the tree if they get too large, and kind of shorten the life of the tree. And this is something that doesn't show itself for years, sometimes decades down the road. And so it's not readily apparent, but you want to make sure that when you're looking at that root system, if you see a lot of circling roots, especially on woody plants, it's been in that container too long, and you may want to find something a little smaller or a different plant that doesn't quite have that circling root situation.
When I shop for plants, I'm often swayed or get my head turned by really lovely blooms. And that's a no-no, right?
Well, it's okay to love the flowers. As long as you take into account, many of us have very nice spring gardens. And one of the reasons for this is that we do most of our plant shopping in the spring, and we absolutely are swayed by those flowers. And so what happens is your garden gets really spring heavy, because that's the stuff that you're really drawn to. And then summer and fall tend to be a little less colorful because those things aren't blooming in the greenhouse, in the nursery, when we're shopping in the spring. And so you want to keep that in mind. It's okay to buy something with flowers on it, but if everything in your cart has flowers on it, then your garden's going to be less colorful later in the season. And that is not typically a goal. So we want to make sure that we're thinking about bloom sequence and time when it comes to shrubs and perennials and those kinds of things, and trying to find those things that are blooming throughout the year. The other thing to keep in mind is that if it's blooming weeks or months earlier than it typically would in your landscape, that can be pretty stressful. So transplanting is already stressful. If they are months ahead of schedule because of the way that they were grown in the greenhouse or where they were shipped from in the country, that can be a little harder on the plant too. Most plants will pull out of it okay, but it's something to be aware of.
All right. And we are almost to a break here, but I need to mention also that it is Mother's Day on Sunday. So if you didn't know that, write that down somewhere, everybody. But this is something we often, of course, buy plants for our moms on Mother's Day. Let's bring a mom into the conversation now. Cindy Haynes is also with us, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And Cindy, you don't have to give all of your advice right now before the break, but what do moms want on Mother's Day? What should we be thinking about?
Moms want love. So, you know, they want love, and it doesn't have to be costly. Plants in bloom are fine. We all love that. I almost always get gardening gloves for Mother's Day. I also always ask for a tree. So some tree. And I have learned to be very specific in the tree that I want so that I make sure I get what I want. So I don't always get a large tree. Sometimes it's a small tree, but I usually get the species that I want.
All right. And maybe just take mom to the garden center and say, hey, pick out what you want, and I'll and give her something else too later.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Some of my best gifts, though, are the surprise ones that didn't cost any money. So they were the stepping stones that Jackson created when he was little, or the painted rocks that he created that I put in containers. So just think about your mom. And like I said, find a way to give love and maybe a plant or two, and you're golden.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer all of your plant questions. Cindy Haynes and Aaron Style are here with us today. You can join the conversation by calling 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And before we get to calls, which we will do in just a moment at 866-780-9100, the other thing about Mother's Day is this is traditionally a really important planting weekend. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit cool right now. Cindy, do we need to not let the calendar get in the way of looking at the forecast?
We should check the forecast first. These warm season plants like tomatoes and peppers that we usually say you can plant after Mother's Day, that's based on, you know, average last frost dates. And this may or may not be an average year. So check the forecast. Generally, if it looks like it's staying above 40s and 50s at night, then you're going to be fine. I think for most of the state, you'll probably be fine in planting some of those next week. But be prepared to have those gallon, you know, milk containers or jugs or some ways to protect things in case it doesn't, because it is a little cooler this year than it has been in the past.
Are you planting this weekend?
I am. I'm hoping to plant some tomatoes and some peppers in a raised bed, which is a little bit warmer. But I do have a couple of, you know, milk jugs on standby just in case.
All right. How about you, Aaron?
I'm going to be working at a plant sale all weekend. So I'm sure I will be purchasing some things, but and working on them through, you know, after work throughout this coming week.
All right. Well, and then the other thing that we do need to touch on, because a lot of us will be buying plants this weekend, is that just because you've bought the plants and they look beautiful, that doesn't necessarily mean you should stick them right in the ground. So, Cindy, right. What do you do?
Right. So acclimation is key for a lot of these. If they weren't outside and acclimated to outside conditions, and some plants are. But if they're tomatoes and peppers and they're coming from a greenhouse, we need to acclimate them slowly to outdoor conditions. So stick them outside for during the day for a couple of hours, bring them back in at night. So you're just slowly getting them to adapt to more wind, to more light and cooler temperatures. And if you do this over a week, that may mean you're not planting until next weekend. But then you have less transplant shock and your plants perform and take off a lot faster.
Okay. Good advice. And we do have a lot of people with questions. So let's jump right in.
Awesome.
Teresa is on the line in Ames. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
I have two questions. I recently bought a home with stunning plantings all over the yard, hundreds of plantings of ground cover and ferns and flowering, all kinds of things. I don't know what they are. And my first question is, I am seeing some things coming up that I suspect are weeds, but because there are hundreds of plantings of things I'm not terribly familiar with, I don't know how to tell that something is a weed. I know what a thistle looks like, but that's kind of the, and a dandelion, but that's about the extent of my knowledge. And then my second question is, I do have a lot of thick growth of seedling maple trees. They've been growing for a while, so when I try to pull them by the root, there's an extensive root system. I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of the seedling maple trees without round-upping the entire hillside. Right. Those
Cindy,
are my two questions.
You want to tackle that?
Yeah, the weed thing is hard. So knowing what is a plant that was planted and what is a weed is going to take some time. And so give yourself that time to you know, try and figure out each and every one of these plants. And that might mean waiting until it's actually in bloom before you can completely identify it. So as a novice gardener, I would just say enjoy what you have, because you have a really nice landscape and you have a lot of plants. And this is your opportunity to go from novice to, you know, intermediate or expert, all in one season or one growing season, just by learning all the different plants that are out there. There's some apps out there that will help you. Story County also has some great master gardeners that are really good at this. You're also close to Ryman Gardens, so you can, you know, walk the gardens and you will find things that, oh, I recognize that, or I recognize that. This is probably that. So you're going to learn a lot about the plants. And as far as the maples, in removing kind of tree seedlings, you're doing the right thing and trying to dig it up and remove as much of the root system as possible. You can cut them off and paint that cut end with Roundup, and that might work. It might require another application as well. That's the other option if you don't want to kind of spray the whole area. And really, with some of them, that's your kind of your two best options, because even these maple tree seedlings will probably come up even through a nice layer of mulch that you put down. So, Aaron, any other ideas?
I would definitely water the night before I plan to weed. That will help kind of soften the soil to make digging and pulling a little bit easier. And the other thing you could try is if you have a pliers or like a needle nose pliers, depending on the size of the seedling, sometimes they can really grab on and give you some good pulling power, a little bit better than your hand or something like that. Because a lot of times that little bark layer slips off if you try to grab onto it with something that doesn't have a good grip. So I've used like a needle nose pliers to pull some of these plants out too.
Yeah, with any weeds, persistence is key. So, and getting as much of the plant as you can. is essential.
All right, Teresa, thanks a lot. Thank you so much. Yeah, good luck. And next up, let's go to Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning. Got a question. I was just listening earlier, and you were talking about the trees and woody shrubs in the containers and how the with the circular rooting. If you have something that is circular rooted like that, is it okay, or does it do much damage to the root system if you try to separate those roots much like you would a potted plant? And will it grow successfully?
Aaron?
So you can try to either trim or straighten out those roots that are running around in circles at the on the pot. And sometimes this is successful, and sometimes these roots are so set on their circular path that they'll continue to do that. If you've purchased a tree that has this situation, that is a good tactic. It is a little stressful to do that much to the root system of the plant when you're putting it in the ground, but it's preferable to leaving those roots in that kind of direction of growing. So, loosen up that root ball a little bit, either trim or straighten out any circular growing roots, dig a nice wide hole, fill it back in with the soil that came out of the hole, and then make sure that you're watering on a regular basis to help promote good rooting in, especially that first year. And don't forget about year 2 and 3. You don't have to water as much in year 1 as you did in year 1, but year 2 and 3 are important too. Doing that will help promote good root growth.
What about slicing some of the roots, you know, gently slicing?
So if you have a situation where there is just an excessive amount of roots right at the kind of interface between the pot edge and the soil in the pot, you can kind of shave some of that off. It will promote a lot of new root growth and development. This is where having a nice wide hole will be helpful for some nice loose soil for those roots to grow into and not stick to the nice potting soil that they're currently in the container. That can work. Some species are going to respond better to that than others. You know, things like maples would be just fine with that. And other more coarse-rooted plants or slow-to-established plants might pout a little bit more. But the same aftercare of good, consistent watering when it's needed and not forgetting to do it in the next couple of years after year 1 of planting will help.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And we haven't really talked about how incredibly dry it is right now. And of course,
it is very dry.
Yeah, Aaron, yes. when you said, hey, water before you weed, I mean, that's great advice because the soil is like concrete in a lot of places right now. Aaron, how concerned are you? How worried at this point?
It is kind of dry. And, you know, this is a time of year we love to plant because Mother Nature often does a lot of watering for us this time of year. And she's not doing it in 2021. So it requires more diligence. And you have to remember that these things that are in the ground, even if the soil surrounding a plant is relatively, damp, the soil, the original root ball or the original soil volume that was growing in the container dries out more quickly in many cases. So you want to check both spots and water when they're dry.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go next to Phyllis in Melvin. Hello, Phyllis.
Hi, good morning. I have a pot of ranunculus that I bought recently and planted it in the ground. I think there's 3 different colors in there. I wonder, do I just leave that in the ground for the winter, or do you have to dig it out like you would a dahlia or something?
So are you planning on keeping it? You want to keep it as a houseplant every year, or do you want to just plant it outside?
I would like to leave it in the ground if I could, and so I would have it again next year.
Okay. Yeah, so if you want to plant that directly in the ground, you can. You can water it well. Some ranunculus, if it's like the cut flower ranunculus, it is best treated almost like an annual and replanted year after year to get those best blooms. They like it a little bit cooler, so that will be something to consider. I don't know if you could even dig that up in the fall and put it in a container and bring it back in and have good success for next year. But I would plant it outside now and enjoy it. And then because those flowers are absolutely gorgeous. And and then just
I have
plant
it
them
in the ground now, and they're just starting to open there. Yeah. I thought maybe if I left them in there, they'd come back next spring.
Yeah, they may or may not. So generally, a lot of the cut flower ranunculus don't reliably overwinter well. So I would plan on having some for next year, purchasing some for next year. And then if they overwinter and come back next year, then it's a bonus.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Phyllis. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Cindy, let's just do a ranunculus follow-up here. This is from Carolyn in Cedar Rapids. How do I grow ranunculus in pots in Iowa for spring blooms?
Right. So actually, they're typically grown for spring blooms as a cut flower in the ground. You can grow them in containers. You'll just have to water them more often. And some of them, when they're grown for cut flowers, you need some sort of support because the cut flower stems are a little bit taller. So that's what you're thinking about when you're growing ranunculus in the ground or in a container. Is making sure there's plenty of sun, that it stays fairly cool, that you have kind of a moist, well-drained soil, and may require a little bit of support in case it gets a little bit leggy and starts to fall over, because those flowers are pretty big for the stems.
All right. And Aaron, here's a question from Mike. I have an Ayers pear tree planted 6 years ago that has yet to bloom. The Bartlett pear next to it blooms with no issues. Both are watered, pruned, and fertilized equally. Any suggestions?
I would look at, and I'm not familiar with that particular cultivar. And so I would probably look to see one, what the hardiness level for this tree is, making sure that it's not getting damaged every winter, and that's why we're not seeing good blooms. I would expect to start seeing flowers in the next year or two. After 6 years, I mean, sometimes, you know, 3 or 4 years to get established. Occasionally we give it grace, 5 years, 6 years, but this is about the time we should start seeing flowers. If we're not seeing them, I would start looking at things like hardiness or site selection, making sure that it's not planted too deeply or under a lot of stress that might be preventing it from blooming, although a lot of trees in particular will bloom more when they're under stress. So, you know, there's kind of two sides to that coin, I suppose. And if you're not seeing what you're looking for, you might have to kind of cut your losses and try a different cultivar.
I will say I have a pear tree, and I don't know what kind of pear tree it is, but we moved into our house 11 years ago. We didn't know what this tree was, and 6 years later, it was already a significant size tree. 6 years later, all of a sudden it bloomed and we had more pears than we knew what to do with. So occasionally there will just be a surprise waiting for you at some time
in the future.
It's
true. I would expect to see it soon though. So, you know, after 6 years, if we're not seeing good or at least even any flowers, then I would start to wonder if something else wasn't going on, which that's when I would start looking at things like, is it getting enough sun? Is it in the right location? Is it fully hardy for where I'm at? Which I think it probably is. Kind of go from there.
All right. Here's a question from Karen. Cindy, I had my lawn renovated last fall by a commercial landscape company. The grass came up unevenly, but where it did come up, there are places where it's very dense. Now, when I mow, those areas turn yellow in about a 1 foot circle. Is this a disease issue? Will it spread by mowing other unaffected areas? What can be done about the dense grass? And there's a PS from Karen. I noticed that some of my neighbors also have the yellow circles in otherwise healthy lawns.
So there could be a couple of things causing the yellow circles. The dense grass is usually what you want. So nice, thick, dense grass is something that's usually what people are looking for. So I don't think it's something that's caused by mowing. There are some diseases that sometimes we see early in the spring on the lawns. There's also some kind of other issues like, you know, dogs peeing in certain places in the lawn that could cause some of these yellow spots or yellowing areas of the lawn that might kill those particular areas for a while. So I think what I would suggest on this one is taking a picture and actually sending it to the plant and insect diagnostic clinic. So let's rule out some of these potential diseases and just by, you know, having a picture to as a place to start, because this is something you want to look at, especially since you went through all the effort and actually, you know, renovating the lawn and starting over in these areas. And and if you don't know what it is, then we don't necessarily know how to fix it. I will say that a newly renovated lawn, continue to water as needed. And so hopefully that it will kind of fill in some of these areas and become less of an issue as it's a vigorous and actively growing lawn.
Okay, terrific. And just type in Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, Iowa State. You'll find it. You can get in touch. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University Extension and ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. Erin Stile is also here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And you can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a speed question, then we'll get to the phones. Erin, I've purchased a flat of petunias and I've been moving them into my garage these cold nights, but it's pretty cold in the garage too. When can I plant them in the ground?
I would say after about a week of acclimating, you'll probably be okay.
All right, and let's go to the phones. Elsie is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Elsie.
Hello, good morning. This is Elsie Monty. Can you hear me okay?
I can. What's your question?
My question is, I have gotten a maple tree called Autumn Glory because I lost my oak tree, and it's called Autumn Glory, and I want to know, my grandson is coming on Mother's Day to help me plant it. Shall I go ahead and soak it up very well and go ahead and dig the hole before they plant it? Anyway, that's and the flower, the tree itself, it looks very healthy. It's green, but it looks very, very healthy. And I'm just wondering what I should do for preparation for this maple tree called Autumn Glory.
All right, Cindy?
Yeah, so I think because it's Mother's Day, that you should do as little work as possible in planting the tree. But you are going to have to do some things to take care of it. So watering it well, you know, before it's planted, because it may need, if it's in a container, it may need some water before planting. And then obviously you need to pick out the site. So pick out where you want this to be.
It's where the oak tree used to be.
Well, you're probably
the oak tree disease isn't going to interfere, right?
No, it should be just fine. But you will probably have to put it off to one side or the other of the oak tree, just because
the oak tree's gone.
Yes. So in good soil in that area, that would be good. It shouldn't be that hard, or hopefully it's not that hard to dig. Another thing to consider might be to call Iowa One Call to make sure that there are no utility lines in the area before planting. I might do that today to see if they can have that taken care of. And then I just put the shovel in the spot that you want it, and you know that there's no power lines. And I bet it won't take your grandson that long to actually dig the hole. Make sure it's not too deep. You heard Aaron tell earlier about, you know, making sure the hole's wider than it is deep. And make sure when you're planting the tree that it's where the roots kind of flare, or where the trunk kind of flares to meet the roots, that is level or a little bit above that surface of the soil. And yeah, I might even buy a bag of mulch to make sure that it's mulched and watered after planting. But being Mother's Day, you should turn over some of these duties to a grandson. It's a great teachable moment, and something he'll remember as well, because he planted a tree for you.
Elsie, thank you so much for your call, and I hope you have a lovely weekend. Let's go next to Abby in Kyoto. Hi, Abby.
Hi, Charity. How are we doing today?
Good. What's your question?
We purchased a property about 2 years ago that was vacant for about 10 to 15 years. The trees, bushes weren't being pruned. And we have a lot of lilacs on our property. We have about six large lilacs that are about 12 to 15 feet in the air, and probably 10 that are 4 to 5 feet. First year we were here, none of the lilacs flowered. And then the second year, this year, we have a few, but they're only really on the smaller trees, and they're very leggy. They're just on the very top. And my question is, do we prune them down to the ground after they're flowering, or do I only prune part of the bush back, or do I just let it leave it and give it a couple more years? Because we've only been here for 2 years.
Aaron?
Well, you'll want to make sure that they're in full sun. That will help a lot. A lot of times older landscapes, things like lilacs get planted in full sun, and then the trees grow up around them and they're not in full sun anymore. So that will be contributing, if they're not in full sun, to the kind of poor flower that you're seeing. I would work over the next 2 or 3 years to completely renovate these shrubs. And to do this, go in. You can do it right after flowering. If you don't have a lot of flowering, you could do it now. Go in and remove the largest branch or two all the way down to the ground. It will reduce the size of the plant, and it will encourage new growth from the base. And that new growth will be better flowering for you. These plants sound like they're old enough and large enough that you probably will only need to remove a branch or two to take out at least a third of the plant. And we're not looking to remove more than about a third of the total size of the plant. If you accidentally remove half, they'll be okay. They're pretty well established, and lilac is pretty forgiving. But your goal is to remove about a third all the way down to the base. And you'll do this over the next 2 or 3 years, always removing the oldest branches, the largest branches. And that should help with the flowering. The fact that you're seeing flowering on some of the younger branches tells me that they're probably getting enough light. It's just some of the growth is so much older that it's no longer flowering well. And that's pretty common for lilac. They flower better on newer growth.
Perfect. That was my question. Thank you so much, Aaron.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We still have room for a couple of more calls this hour. Here's an email question, Cindy, from Jenny in Iowa City. For the past 5 years or so, I've been unable to get my Brussels sprouts to actually produce sprouts. They have had nice, lush foliage, but no sprouts. I've tried topping them. I've tried different varieties from different nurseries, but nothing works. What is the reason for this, and what can I do?
Yeah, Brussels sprouts are not the easiest to actually grow, though they might really like this spring because it's been so nice and cool for so long. Generally, we have better luck with growing Brussels sprouts, starting them in late summer and growing them as a fall crop. So what I would suggest is, if you have Brussels sprouts out there now, keep your fingers crossed. They may actually produce something. They're a really long season, cool season crop, so they take a long time, and it usually gets really hot, and then that just kind of, they peter out before they start producing those little side sprouts. I might suggest trying this again, transplanting out some little transplants in August, maybe before, right around the state fair, kind of keeping them cool and well watered, and then growing them and see if you have better luck with that fall crop instead of the spring crop. And Aaron, do you have any other ideas? Because Brussels sprouts are hard.
Yeah, and they do. They can take a while to grow, right. And they usually do really suffer with our hot summers. And so, I think trying a fall crop would be a lot of fun. And there are a lot of people who swear that Brussels sprouts hit by the first frost in their garden right. taste better. So, yes. A fall crop of Brussels sprouts can be really nice.
All right, let's.
So that might be the key, is switching the time of when you're actually growing them.
All right. Good luck. Let's go back to the phones. John is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
I had another tree question. I just planted a October Glory maple. And when will I need to fertilize that tree?
Aaron?
Do you fertilize your lawn?
I do.
So you probably will never need to fertilize the tree if you're fertilizing your lawn. Most woody plants and shade trees in particular don't need a lot of extra fertilizer. And when you fertilize your lawn, you're fertilizing the things around it too. So it's getting some fertilizer from those lawn treatments. And most trees don't need a lot of fertilizer to be successful. The most important thing for the success of this tree in the next year will be good, consistent watering when it's needed, when the soil is dry. And the most important thing for this tree in the next 5 years is going to be pruning to make sure that you don't get any double leaders or crossing branches, so that you have a nice structured tree moving forward. Fertilizer, especially for us here in Iowa with our decent soils and the fact that you're fertilizing your lawn, won't be necessary.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. 866-780-9100 is the number. Cindy, Jim says, we have an asparagus bed in which some of the stalks have gone to the fern stage. Can we still have the vegetative 9-inch stalks without adversely affecting the bed in future years?
Yes, you still can. So I noticed that some of mine started branching a little bit when we got that really warm weather. So yes, you can still... you can let those particular stalks go and harvest some others, or you can actually eat those before they actually fully fern out. They're still edible. So keep harvesting that asparagus. We've got another 2 or 3 weeks where it should still be good.
Speaking of that one really warm, I would even call it hot day, last Sunday. So I was out of town on Sunday. On Saturday, my lilacs were just beginning to bloom. I came back and I looked at them on Monday, and a lot of my blossoms had turned brown.
Yep.
So yep. Had they scorched?
They probably did. So just that excess heat. The heat is the cool weather that we had earlier really extended the bloom of things like daffodils and other things. And then when you flip the switch and it becomes incredibly hot, things just go very quickly because they're not used to that hot weather. They do what they need to do and then they're done, because they do sometimes scorch in the sun, or the wind can also make flowers last a lot less time just because of that heat and wind.
Well, so. Fortunately, I think I'm still going to have a lot of really beautiful lilacs, but I was very disappointed. And I've been so spoiled by this incredibly gorgeous flowering spring we've had. So
this is true.
All right. Here's a question for Dawn, or from Dawn in Davenport for you, Aaron. We are looking to possibly plant some Bassetti bamboo as a privacy screen between our property and our neighbors. I've read that it does well in zone 5 without becoming too overgrown, but I'm also worried that it is invasive. I understand that it has a growth period of only 60 to 90 days each year where you can mow or weed whack any new growth in any area where it isn't wanted. We'd like something fast growing that will fill in quickly. What do you think?
Well, we are definitely at the very northern edge for this plant, so it's not going to be as aggressive as it might be in warmer parts of the country, but bamboo is notoriously an aggressive spreader. Many of them are. I would make sure that I plant this thing in a place that has boundaries. So buildings, sidewalks, driveways, those kinds of things to help keep it contained. And when you see it, if you see it, when you likely will see it pop up in a place that you don't want it, to deal with it right away. This is one where most of these types of bamboos will spread by underground runners. They will go a couple of inches deep. So you can put an edging in, but it has to go down probably a lot deeper than many of us really want to dig. Mm-hmm. But it is a possibility to also put in an edging. You probably want it at least 4 inches, if not more like 6 to 8 inches deep, to help prevent those little runners from reaching out and going off in other directions. This is the kind of plant that can very easily start as one that you're really excited about and become one of your least favorite plants because of the way that it spreads. And so whenever I have a plant like that, I make sure that I have a good system in place to keep it in bounds. And that will go a long ways.
All right. Here is a question from Larry. Cindy, can I overwater new trees?
Absolutely. So we can kill things just as quickly by overwatering as we do by underwatering. So check the soil first. It's just like any houseplant. You want it to kind of dry out slightly on top. And if you have a really heavy clay soil, you might not be watering, but maybe once a month for newly planted trees, whereas in a sandy soil, you might need to water every week. So yeah, check first. So, and check the root ball a little bit, and you can also check the surrounding soil, and you can certainly overwater.
All right. Mm-hmm. Here's Gerard in Fairfield. Hi, Gerard.
Yeah, packaging.
Yep.
Hello, Gerard. Well, I think he's doing something else right now. So let's go to Steve, south of Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm planting some fruit trees, and I've moved some small oak trees around on my property, and I wonder if it's a good idea to plant clover around the base of the tree. Will that feed nitrogen into the soil far enough for the tree to actually get to it?
Aaron?
I wouldn't plant anything around the base of the tree. I would put about 2 to 4 inches of mulch around the base and not have any competition for those new roots moving forward to help them. Because most of those tree roots are in the same root zone as that clover would be, and we don't want any competition.
All right, Steve, thanks for your call. And here's a follow-up question to one of the lilacs you were talking about earlier, Aaron, from Mike. Mm-hmm. He says, I heard what you said about cutting back lilacs. Can the same process be used on a mock orange tree?
It can be used on any multi-stem shrub. And right now, or actually late winter, early spring is the best time to do it, but you sacrifice flowering doing it at that time. If you don't want to sacrifice flowering, do it right after it's done flowering.
All right. And with 30 seconds left, Cindy, Roger in West Des Moines says, I have 3 apple trees. They've all bloomed and produced apples for several years. This year, no blooms yet. They should be in full bloom by now. Any thoughts on why?
Yeah, I don't know as to why. I would go check the stems to make sure that they're still alive, that maybe there was not something that kind of blasted the flowers. But as long as the stems are okay, the tree's okay. And yeah, you're right. No flowers usually means no fruit this year.
Yeah,
sorry
bummer
to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are out of time, but thank you both so much for being here. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to you too. Aaron Style, thank you.
You're welcome.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a wonderful weekend. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.